Welcome to the Directing Animation Live cast with Scott Weiser. Now that I'm done directing the development and first episode of the second series of Space Station Animation, I'm joining up with Steamroller Animation to push the boundaries of the art form. Thanks to the support of so many of you, I'm continually developing more than 10 dynamic feature film pitches while mastering the art of telling deeply meaningful stories. Today's guest is somebody I have the pleasure of working with.
I'm very, very excited and happy to be here, Scott.
It's wonderful to have you. Wonderful to have you.
Thank you, man.
As we mentioned in the title of this video and also in the notes down below, Aaron has a very unique style of leadership. He's pulling from a lot of different places to different philosophies of how to lead a studio. And the first version of this that we wrote, I kind of set you up as this expert on leadership. And I really loved your response to that, Aaron, where you talked about how, well, we have a lot of ideas and we're still exploring those ideas and seeing how they play out. Can you speak to that a bit and, you know, where your head was at that point?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think the main thing to know here is that everything that we're trying to do is through a lack of having it in my background and past. And so there is no blueprint, right? Like I haven't, when I joined Steamroller, there was a sense of a design based on things that I cobbled together in my past experience as a head of animation at DNEG. But nobody told me what to do. It wasn't comprehensive. There wasn't some roadmap that I was following. There was no book out there that was telling me what I should do. So when I came to Steam, and also it's important to mention that those experiments in leadership at DNEG were really a team of 35 animators. It was a very small and insulated group of people. And I had the added advantage that those group of people knew each other really well.
Yeah.
So there was already Robin Luckham, who was the former head of animation at DNEG. He had already done a lot of work to kind of build culture. There just wasn't an enormous amount of structure around how that culture was propagated, you know, over time. And that's what I was playing with. But then when I got to Steamroller, it's like, well, you know, now we're 200, right? And so it's like, well, how do you extrapolate what you're doing with 35 and not only, you know, expand on that to 200, but then all of the nuances of running a business have to go into that as well, which I didn't have to deal with at DNEG. I was just, you know, dealing with a department. And so ultimately at Steamroller, there's no blueprint. I think the most important thing for us is our ability to self-reflect and to know when we're not doing it right.
Right.
And to be able to pivot and make the change really fast. That's the key.
I love that. Now, it's going to be very obvious to our audience now that this is live, because they didn't hear my introduction of you. So I'm going to reintroduce you.
Okay.
As you can hear, Aaron Gilman is very astute, a great leader, right? He's somebody I get to work with often because I work at Steamroller Studios. He's the CEO of Steamroller Studios. And as you heard him mention, he had a stint of directing animation at DNEG. Before that, he worked as an animator at Weta Digital. He's worked on films like Iron Man and Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked. Yours is Road Chip.
I'm Road Chip.
Yep. Godzilla, The Avengers. I mean, lots of amazing projects. Avatar, which is cool because Steamroller Studios worked on Avatar too. So that's
right.
Nice.
That
how
was
that's
amazing.
Kind of
oh, yeah. full
come
circle.
Full circle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just so everybody knows what we're talking about, sorry that we missed the intro. We were just muted for a second. So
oh, we were muted. Yeah, no worries.
Yeah,
I think, like to me, the thing that I still kind of wake up every day and I'm sort of blown away by the fact that I don't know. Sometimes I don't know how I got here. You know what I mean? Like I was an animator for a really long time, and sort of in the trenches and understanding what it is like to be an artist on the ground, you know, working on really difficult shows that, you know, stretch you in every, you know, way, just massive amounts of overtime and really difficult clients and, you know, the problems that come with working in visual effects, period. Anybody who's worked on a live action film knows that there are all sorts of complexities with making those types of projects that trickle down to the artist on the ground or the animator on the ground.
Yeah.
And so after all of this time, I'm somehow in a position where, you know, essentially running a studio and designing how that studio operates. And it's pretty mind blowing, I have to say, and super exciting. And I've sort of been on cloud nine for the past 2 years, really, like quite literally every day. Yeah.
It does feel a little cloud nine-ish here. I've been telling people often, and I wonder if I should say this because I've worked with so many studios, but it's my favorite, you know? It really has been a wonderful experience. One of the, I guess, white flag, is that the opposite of a red flag? One of the white flags that came up for me was in my interview where they're like, we don't want you to work overtime. I thought, I've been in so many studios where that's kind of the norm is to work overtime, right?
Yeah.
And for me personally, I found out I was faster if I didn't work overtime because there was an energy component there where if I was working the overtime, I would lose the energy. How did you come to make that decision that there would be?
Yeah. So actually obviously I come from visual effects where overtime is a constant and perpetual reality.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the nobody wants to change the delivery date of the film, but nothing throughout the process ever delivers on time.
Right.
So inevitably someone gets crunched and squeezed. It's often, you know, compositing at the end of the process, animation, all sorts of departments get squeezed. So for me, overtime has always been a reality. You know, I've had horrible runs where I've worked overtime for a year and a half straight. I've had runs where I've worked, you know, 5 weeks at 110, 105 hours a week. That's insane. That's 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day. And so when I came to Steamroller, the mentality of overtime was the opposite of what I knew.
Yeah.
And obviously, as a leader in visual effects, you're always trying to protect your team. I think anybody worth their salt as a leader in visual effects should be working against that wave, right? Which is you want to protect your team from overtime.
Yes.
because you know what all the detriments are should your team do too much overtime, which is you lose loyalty, you lose trust, you lose transparency, and you end up burning people out, and they're much quicker to sort of go down the street for $5 an hour extra because they want to get away from that reality. So at Steamroller, that culture of non-overtime had already been built for years. That came from, you know, the leadership there, from Jalil and Adam and Keith and, you know, all of the management at Steamroller before I got there. And then when I got there, it was like, it was like a breath of fresh air, you know, it was like, oh my God. And then there's more to mention just on the overtime side with Steamroller, which is we also are very, very flexible when it comes to working hours in terms of the number of days in the week that you want to work. We do 4 day weeks. We do 4.5 day weeks. If you want to do a 5 day week, you can. But whenever overtime comes up as a topic, it's a big deal at Steamroller. It's like a feels like a really apologetic conversation. It doesn't happen very often, which is wonderful. But when it does, everybody takes it like super seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love that, though. And I know you quoted Simon Sinek a lot. I love his philosophy of leaders eat last, you know. And I know that there was one speech I listened to him give that was just brilliant, where they could either lay off people or everybody could take like a month off. That was the difference. And people were willing to do that because they knew that we were all taking a little bit of the cost to be able to benefit the whole. And this seems like that type of thing where.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think the interesting thing for me coming into this position is that I'm coming into it with almost a non-existent sense of business. I have no business background at all. You know, it's really important, I think, to understand this because I think that it's not just myself, but the other owners at Steamroller didn't come into that experience of starting an animation studio with a business-minded mentality. The mentality is we want to make beautiful stuff. We want to create stuff, right? And for me personally, I came into this experience with the mentality of what it is like to be an animator on the ground working in these projects for so many years at every level, right? Head of animation or animation direction or supervision or a lead. And so for me, my mental priorities in everything that I do at Steamroller tends to come from what is important for a human being, what is important for the experience and the relationship that staff have to the studio. And then the business side of it is always secondary. Not to say that it's not essential, because we're operating a profitable, wonderful business. We're not sinking.
Right.
So we're doing something right. But the point is that the prioritization of those ideas are reversed. Whereas I think often what happens is, you know, when you have, you know, business-minded people running an operation, they tend to be less creative in their thinking when it comes to how to problem solve around people. And so when you're problem solving around people, but your priority is the bottom line,
yeah,
you're much quicker to make, you know, really aggressive moves that don't necessarily favor, you know, the relationships that you've built with the people in the studio. We do it opposite to that, and it's working for us quite well, because of course people like you will say, I really enjoy working here. Mm-hmm. And that is our absolute priority, because, you know, a lot of business-minded people don't understand the value of that relationship. If you leave us, it's like cutting off part of our body, right? We lose a part of ourselves, and that is really destructive to a company, I think.
Yeah. It definitely is. Yeah. And you also have a big emphasis on training. I'd love to hear more about that.
And it's all about, so yeah, I mean, the training is just one component of why the relationship is so important, right? So the way that I personally see training is, okay, so we always think of training as being relegated to people in positions of authority and experience and skill, right? Mm-hmm. So training is often done by your supervisors, by your heads of department, by your leads. And for me, the problem there is that any company that thinks it wants to do a lot of training ends up doing very little training, because those individuals are always the bottleneck for the training. Number one, there's fewer of them. Right. Obviously, they're managing much larger groups of people, so there's fewer of them in their role. And because of all of the crazy, hard, complicated work they're doing, they have no time to do training. Training takes time. It has to be prepared and planned. There's got to be time booked out for it, et cetera, et cetera. So we view training a little bit differently at Steamroller, which is we essentially have an army of staff development coordinators. This is a team that we have built that is an extension of our human resources department. And what they're doing is they are out there among the staff looking for training, regardless of level, seniority, regardless of any of those things. And they're trying to identify people that want to, essentially, as Simon Sinek said, want to put themselves at risk. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what leadership is. It is putting yourself at risk for others.
Yeah.
And so training is a form of that. When you offer some knowledge that you have to your team, you are stepping out of your comfort zone to put yourself at risk for others for their gain. But also, more importantly, you are building relationships in that moment with tons of people.
Yes.
So if I find a mid-level animator who does something really well, it could be anything. It could be they understand constraint systems, or their conversion of step to spline. They do it really well. They've got a workflow that they're just really comfortable with. We want to identify that, and we want to encourage them to teach other people how to do what they know. Because in doing that, almost even regardless of what the topic is, it's just the act of doing it that we are, number one, we are teaching them to flex leadership muscles.
Yeah.
But they're only mid-level animators. They're not in a leadership position yet, but they are exercising a leadership mindset.
Mm.
Number two, they're building relationships. Everybody that they teach now remembers them, looks at them, knows them, talks to them, asks them questions. So you're creating all sorts of little fireworks that are going on within a team just by doing that.
Yeah.
And of course, you're bettering the studio because we record those things, we create libraries, we have this long, you know, large repository of information that's being shared. So training's really important to us. We execute training at Steamroller like a show. And that's one of the other big differences that I think we have with, at least, you know, where I've worked in the past, which is training is managed through shotgun.
Yeah.
That's unusual.
That is.
Usually the way training works is like, hey, guys, let's get everybody together. I'm going to show you what I know how to do. And you gather everybody up organically and you show them something on a projector. Maybe it gets recorded. Maybe it doesn't. And then once it's over, you don't really have any record of it happening.
Yeah.
At Steamroller, all of our production teams across all shows are responsible for tracking training, working with the supervisor and the human resources representative to find those people, identify them, schedule them, and create time for them to be executed upon. And so, you know, in 2022, I think we had some astronomical number for official training sessions that were done across the entire company. It was really, really incredible. Something very proud of. Now, of course, you know, leadership just takes a ton of work.
It does.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about like the difference between managing and leading, right?
Oh, there's a big difference.
Managing is juggling. You're keeping the balls in the air and praying that nothing falls. Leadership is the exact same thing, except every now and again, you're adding another ball. Mm-hmm. And you keep adding. And there's a motivation. There's a drive to have to add that next ball. That's leadership to me.
Yeah. Leadership is also built in the way you've built the training too. So at other studios I'd worked at, especially when I was directing before this, I would ask people on the team to create trainings if they did something real, really well to help the rest of us. Now I find I do that twice as often. So I'll see a team member that does something well. I'm like, can you create a video on that? You know, and they are better equipped to know how to do it as well. Mm-hmm. So I can expect with a little less work that I could just know that they're going to create a good training by nature of they've seen it done so many times here. They're like, yeah, I know how a good training goes, you know, and I still do a little bit of leadership and you know, look at their outline and mentor them as they create the training. But yeah, it's been amazing to
think about what you're doing for them when you request them to provide that training. They're not viewing it as a hassle. They're viewing it as a show of you know, respect and loyalty and appreciation.
Yeah, I got goosebumps as you said that. That's awesome.
Yeah, those things are so important. They literally are the DNA of a healthy company, I think, because that relationship you forge with them, it's going to last you for years. Even after you guys leave the studio, that relationship is still there through connections and networking and relationships. And training is almost like a microcosm of a much bigger concept that really kind of keeps a studio healthy, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is. And oh, something came to mind as you were compare this to like the first job I had in animation where training did happen, but it was more like, we're just sitting and working, and then somebody's like, I'm really struggling with this thing. And somebody's like, well, have you seen this? And you show something to somebody really quick. But then that training happens in that moment, and it doesn't benefit anybody else. It's not these fireworks that you talked about. I love the analogy you used to fireworks, because the firework doesn't just create a little light, one little light. It's a lot of lights go out, and it hits a lot of different particles in the air.
And on that note, there was one other aspect of training that you're commenting on here that I want to add to, which is, you know, when I was saying that I'm not a businessman, right? I didn't come into this as a business degree person. I came into it as someone who wants to create a dynamic and healthy and passionate place for people to work. Part of that is what I believe is a studio's accountability to develop people. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have to grow you.
Yeah.
That is part of our responsibility. We don't just hire you on the basis of your resume. We hire you on the basis of what the future of our relationship to you is going to be.
Yeah.
And training is a huge component of that, which is we are responsible for upskilling you. It can't just be this random thing. Oh, you got onto a hard project and learned a couple of new things. That's part of it. But we also have to actively motivate ourselves to teach and grow and develop you so that you feel as if the company cares about your path forward in your personal career.
Right.
And so the training, the way we document it, the way we track it, the way we design the whole training system means that anytime someone says, and this is happening all the time at Steamroller, someone says, again, through our system that we haven't talked in detail about, they'll say, hey, I really want training on facial animation. Mm-hmm. Well, because of the way we've designed the system, I have 10 different lectures and training sessions that have been done over the years on facial animation. Mm-hmm. And I can, in 2 seconds, provide all of that to that animator. And as a result, I am fulfilling my studio's responsibility to grow you as a human being in the craft that you are passionate about.
Yeah.
And so we're able to do that all the time. There's almost nothing that we haven't really trained on at this stage and can keep developing it and sharing it. And it becomes just part of the knowledge base of the company, you know.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it's really a joy. Cool. It's a joy. I know that, you know, when I first, like a couple months in, you said, set this calendar, you know, item on there to go through your production, your items, like your different
possible
requests for training. And I, you know, at first I was like, okay, that's another thing to do, right? But it's become a joy. It's become a joy.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear, Scott. I'm really happy to hear that because, you know, part of what we did when I started was we started changing job descriptions. we literally started changing what people thought was the mandate of their role. And that doesn't mean changing it like, you know, changing the whole thing, but it means adding things that you can't get away from. It's now part of your job description at this company. Mm. There's no optional thing here. You got to do it. And part of that is what you just described. And I'm happy to hear that it's a joy. That really, really helps. It's also essential.
Yes.
And it just needs to be done because, you know,
Well, and it might seem like it's more work in the beginning, but it's actually less work as you go along. Because the better trained your team is, the more likely you're going to be able to, you know, have a shorthand in like in rounds when you're going and you're talking about their animation, you can very quickly say, these are the items you need to look at. And the team knows how to accomplish that. Yeah.
You're so right. That's so essential. That's absolutely true, which is ultimately in the long run, you're creating a more streamlined workflow and process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated. I know you can't, because obviously working in our business, there's lots of NDA stuff, right? But I am really excited for what you can say about the future of SteamRoller Studios. Being on the inside, it's amazing to see all the things that are coming. But we can't talk about those things, right? But I know
It depends on what you're talking about. There's a lot we can talk about.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd love to go into that because I think there are a lot of eyes on SteamRoller. Like there's something special going on there. What's going on?
I think so. I think so too.
Yeah.
You know, I did a talk yesterday at a school, and I actually came up with what I thought was a bit of an analogy here, which is when I went to Weta to work on Avatar, that's how I met Jalil, right?
Yeah.
So when I went there, everybody online was really kind of crapping on Avatar. You know, some trailers have come out and everybody was like, oh God, it just looks like, you know, Pocahontas in space. You know, it's like blue people. And yet when we were working on it at Weta, it was literally every day that you would see something new get rendered or animated on the film. And everybody in that company knew it was special.
Yeah.
There was something that was happening on that film that was going to change things. It was really exciting.
Yeah.
And I feel the exact same way about SteamRoller. Something's happening. Something is happening. Something's developing. There's a momentum, I think, that's being generated that I think is going to be very special. And you know, I really hope it will be. But I mean, I think honestly, I think one of the biggest differences, there's a bunch of things that sort of set us apart, I think. I think we've done things kind of backwards, and that is unique in and of itself, which is I think a lot of studios, when they start, the mentality is to build a pipeline. We need an A to Z pipeline, because the pipeline is the service. Right. At least that's my background. If you go to, you know, visual effects studios, the pipeline is the service. That's what you're selling.
Right.
But for us, we never did that. We made the animation component only the service. And so what happens there is there's number one, a massive reduction in just the overhead. The overhead of management, the financial overhead, the impact if things go wrong, which is you're not carrying a whole pipeline. So if you bottleneck in one area, you're not suddenly, you know, paying out of pocket on tons of these other areas that are now stalled. And so by offering just animation as a craft and that as a service, and building the the revenue foundation of the business through that offering, has allowed us to focus the studio around the culture of animation. And that has created, I think, a different dynamic than when you have a lot of focused attention on a ton of different departments and crafts going on at any one time, the technology involved in stringing all those together. That is a very different psychology, I think, that happens than when you are just offering the best potential possible animation for a specific project. Number two, we're only starting to build our pipeline now. We're going into our 9th or 10th year almost now of Steamroller.
Yeah.
And we're now building the pipeline.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
And the pipeline isn't being built with the intention of offering it as a service to the world.
Mm-hmm.
The pipeline is being built with the intention of offering it to ourselves.
Right.
As an execution of our perception of the craft of animation. And so it's a very personal thing for us, this pipeline that we're building, because it's ultimately servicing our own vision that we are creating and adapting ourselves within the confines of the studio.
Wow.
So there's a very interesting dynamic or interplay that's happening between, you know, what we do to bring money into the company versus what we are doing as we spend that money. And that to me is really cool. So if you ask me, where will Steamroller be in the future? Well, number one, we love the fact that we are owned and operated by artists, by, you know, some animators and designers. And that's really important to us because it means that we can make aggressive decisions on the part of the craft in the name of the craft versus, the sort of return on investment that a venture capitalist or a business or someone who's pumping money into our company will expect to receive.
Yeah.
So we don't have to deal with that, which is very interesting. And number two, we are so much in a mindset that the success of the studio will be on the back of being able to generate our own storytelling devices,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to always being dependent on the service side of our business. Now, the service side of our business isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
It will always be there. It's part and parcel of our ecosystem. And we love it. However, at the same time, we have a lot of things we want to show the world that are our own.
Yeah.
And so the future of the studio ultimately is having our own projects find, you know, their homes, their distribution homes in the streaming services and in the cinemas and, on the award circuits. And, we really want to keep doing that. And we've been doing it consistently. Obviously, you had the Spice Frontier short in 2020. You had the Master teaser in 2021. Mm-hmm. 2022, we did our own animated logo for the studio. All of these things are paid for out of pocket, right? And now we're doing episode one of Spice Frontier, which, is important to remember. There's no deal there yet. We haven't sold this thing. And, that's a little scary at times, but at the same time, there's nothing that's going to stop us from continuing to explore our storytelling look, style, feel. And so the future is really developing these projects that we're creating ourselves, I think.
I love that too. Several shows ago, there was a guy named Daniel Harmon, and he's part of Angel Studios. They're more distributing and financing, but they built it based on a book called The User Method. And that's exactly what you just described, Some people would build a pipeline to be able to then service clients. The pipeline we're building is to service the work we want to do.
That's
which
right.
Which is hugely different. And
Interestingly enough, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you want to go back to the, Simon Sinek, you talk about the why, Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You talk about the golden circle that he's described, very famous. And for anybody watching this that doesn't know what I'm talking about, go check that out, because it's amazing. And it means a lot. And you know, I think, you know, he said that, you know, you should be able to wake up every morning and re-clarify to yourself what your why is. What is your purpose for going into work every day? Why are you doing it? And I think that is very much why we're building a pipeline for ourselves. That's the how, but it's servicing the why, which is we're really passionate about telling stories. It doesn't really matter if it's a short film, if it's a series, if it's a video game, which is how Steamroller started.
Right. Yeah.
the format doesn't matter. It's that we want to tell meaningful stories and we want to do it in really creative ways. That's the why of the studio. And again, because we are artists who have nobody above us, finally, after all of these years, I don't have anybody above me to tell me, no, I can't.
Yeah.
We can be very aggressive about making those decisions, you know, and as long as we're doing them responsibly, and we do, like I said, we're not necessarily businessmen, but we're not idiots, right? We know how to make good, responsible decisions for the company. I think we're going to find great success. I look at work from Spice Frontier every day, the episode one, and I cannot believe what we're doing and how amazing it is. The acting,
it's mind-blowing.
Is so good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really inspiring, super inspiring. I've interacted with a lot of executives, you know, going around and being a pitch man, you know, and trying to pitch original content. And the first time I met you, it was very refreshing because I felt like I was meeting a fellow artist who has great experience, but I was still able to respect, you know, where you were and where you were coming from and that sort of thing. And that was nice. I think that sometimes there will be an air somebody will put on to command respect. And that just doesn't really work. It doesn't achieve the result that you're looking for. That respect is more earned. It's more in how the relationship unfolds, you know, rather than...
And that's why I think the best way to command respect is to always be your authentic self, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I think people can detect very quickly when there's sort of an illusion of needing respect as opposed to how you conduct yourself and the values that you have. And for me personally, I ask myself every day why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I'm so excited about it. And it has almost entirely to do with the idea that it's just all about the relationship. I just really, really want people to love to work in an environment that, and this is where the selfish part comes in, that I've helped design.
Yeah.
I want to do it better than I had experienced myself in the past because of my own ideas about how it could be done. And so to have the authority and the freedom to experiment and do those things all in the name of trying to create stronger dynamics within the studio is honestly the most exciting thing for me personally.
Yeah.
And then of course there's, I really want Spice Frontier to be on a streaming service, you know, that's really exciting also.
Well, somebody's got to pick it up. They'd be foolish not to.
I agree.
Yeah.
And that's one thing to mention, which is that's where the business savvy of this industry, that's where we show a weakness, right? Which is, we're great artists and we have this passion to make stuff and we're super ballsy. We'll put money into it and we'll do it and we'll create these really cool shows. But the other side of it is that we're not deal makers and we're not businessmen. And so we're learning as we go how to craft those things and actually get it out there. And that is a slog. It's a difficult, complicated process that is a little painful at times. Yeah,
definitely. It can definitely be painful. Sure.
But on a positive note, you know, between Jalil, myself, and some others, we have an enormous amount of connections. We're very connected to the industry at the studio level as well. So I really do believe it's just a matter of time. And the more we do on Spice Frontier, like, pretty soon in June, we're going to have sequences to show, like full sequences.
Right.
And I think we're going to start to see the tipping point at that stage. Yeah.
Nice. Tipping point. Are you referencing a book there?
No. I just think the tipping point in terms of like, it's been an uphill battle to kind of get people to look at this and understand
and see how, what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I really feel like, I don't know. Obviously I'm biased, but it's like, if I was anybody else in the world, I would look at us and go, that's a horse to bet on. Those are people I want to be involved with. Mm-hmm. And I think that as we hit the summer and we start to see sequences of Spice Frontier get, you know, finaled and rendered and the look is there, I think the tipping point is that people are going to go, okay, I get it now.
And
it's going to be a cascade effect, I hope. So
yeah, that is the hope. That's awesome. And I think that's awesome that you're willing to, you know, say this is where we're going to work on things. You know, this is the weakness. Is I don't even know if I would necessarily call it a weakness. It's more of this is the room to grow. Right, we're going to grow in the business sense and getting these things distributed and getting them, you know, on the streaming platforms, in the theaters, wherever else they need to be to not only make money but just get a broad audience, get people watching the thing. You know,
absolutely, and I do think that. Any smart decision maker is going to be able to know when they are deficient in an area and then start to surround themselves with people who are not deficient in that area. And that's something we've been doing for a while. We have people that work with us that we have brought on to either consult or in full-time positions that have that experience. So as time goes by, we are building those sorts of, the tool set, I think, that will help us. You know, it's not just going to be on me.
Right.
To get those shows sold and to get, you know, people in the room to hear our pitches and that sort of thing. So,
oh, that's awesome. So, do you miss being an artist? Like, do you miss working on the things as an animator?
So, you know, it's interesting. So I don't often talk about this. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I haven't. Okay. So here's the thing. You said to me, do you miss being an artist? And I refer to everybody else as artists, but I have never referred to myself as an artist. I actually don't
even
think
when
that
you
I
were
am.
Working as yeah. in the industry. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'll tell you why I think that. Number one, I mean, you're an artist. Okay. I've worked with real artists. These are people who, when their work day is done, they're at home doing their own stuff. They're designing and creating, and maybe they're animating a short film. I've got friends who do stop motion. I've got friends who are obsessed with photography. And, you know, I was never like that. I had my strengths in other areas, which were I was a really good technician.
Yeah.
And I draw a difference between a technician and an artist.
Oh, that's cool.
a technician being, I can really help you develop your idea. I'm really good at synthesizing ideas, at recommunicating them back to someone, and I can insert my own ideas, but I'm not the visionary of the artistry of the idea. I'm sort of a really strong support. Of course, I was a fine animator and I was fast and I could get shows done and I got my reel and all of that, but I would have never called myself an artist.
Yes.
So I think really the question is, do I miss animating? Do I miss being on the ground, working in shots and all of that? And yeah, I think part of me does, but not to any significant degree. I really feel like I see my career path as just a very exciting series of stepping stones to getting to what I am doing now, which is by far the most passionate I've ever been what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I think so. And some people love to commit themselves to the one thing. I have friends that, you know, have been animators their entire careers and they are amazing and you can give them a shot with 20 characters kicking the crap out of each other and they love being in that and that world. And for me, I sort of always needed the next challenge, I guess you would say. And that's why I chose to go that kind of leadership route. But now, in the role I'm in right now, I have never felt more stimulated, even when I was animating. And I had highs when I was animating, incredible highs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but this is just mind-blowing to me because it's so important for so many people. That's the thing that really drives me. It's so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
I do want to push back just a little bit on the not an artist thing.
go ahead. I'll take it.
But I'm going to push it in a different direction. So
okay.
Leadership requires a high level of creativity, you know?
Yeah.
And that might be part of why you're just so thrilled all the time, because you're being very, very creative as a leader. And that's extremely valuable.
Yeah, no, I can accept that, and I'll take it. I definitely think that I think you know that I did my degree in philosophy, specifically in like logic and metaphysics, and so I really like the brainstorming process. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like I like to throw out a lot of possibilities. I think I do have creativity there where I don't ever want to just do it the status quo sort of way. It's like, I do want to think of other ways to do it. You were talking about, well, maybe if we all take time off for a month, that might, you know, what you were saying before, that's an interesting thing to me that I like to kind of, you know,
Yeah.
So there is creativity in that. You are absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay, so the last question that I always ask my guests is...
Are we almost done?
Yeah, we are.
Oh,
we have 4 minutes. Okay. I know, it's been wonderful.
I was having a great time. It's I just feel like flying. It was fun like that.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I was like, oh, it's time for that question. It's the Get Wiser moment. And yeah. The question is, usually, we can go in a different direction now. It's usually, if my goal is to get the highest clarity of truth into a film, what approach would you recommend? I actually would like to ask you, how do you create an environment where that kind of result is possible, where there's a highest clarity of truth coming out in a project?
In a project, or can I...
In a story.
In a story.
Mm-hmm. Like a film like Spice Frontier or whatever other projects we'll be releasing.
Yeah. How do you get the highest clarity of truth?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And... So when you say truth, I imagine you mean honesty?
That's a component, yes.
Yeah. Honesty, sincerity, authenticity.
Yeah. In one interview when somebody asked me, what do you mean by truth? I said, when I watched Sunset Boulevard, that classic black and white film, I sat down with my wife after and I was like, I need to make life changes, right? There's something that happened over watching that film that I realized, like I saw something in me that was broken, you know, just like the character in the film. And that is truth, right? It lifted me to a higher plane of existence.
Sunset Boulevard is, I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great film. My only problem with that film was I remember always having trouble wrapping my brain around the fact that the entire movie is narrated by someone who's dead.
I know.
Like, wait, what? How's that possible?
He's a ghost.
Yeah. I feel like, am I allowed to shift the focus of the question?
Absolutely.
To be about establishing the truth of the studio?
Sure.
Can I extrapolate it from the project?
Absolutely.
And look more towards the studio.
Absolutely.
Because I think about this sort of all the time, right? Which is, what is the essence of what we're trying to do, and what's the meaning behind that?
Yeah.
And I don't know how much time we have. Are we allowed to?
We can go over. Yep.
Okay. So, I guess for me, the truth is in the authenticity of relationships, and maybe that can be part of the story as well, right?
Absolutely.
So do you think that we could mention to your viewers about our staff development role and what we want that HR role to be?
Absolutely.
And why it's so important to us?
Yeah.
Okay, so what we've done is we've sort of tried to shift the mentality and functioning of the human resources department. And by the way, even our own human resources department is not entirely aware of what I'm about to say, which is I think we're even going to rebrand the entire department. I don't want to call it human resources anymore. I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's got a terrible connotation to it. And everybody always identifies human resources as sort of being this sideline department that's only there when, you know, something's gone bad. There's a problem with your money, your payroll, your health, your this or that. And what we've done is we've said, well, we actually think that the human resources department is a department that somehow must be infused in everything that we do on a day-to-day level across all projects. And so what we've done is we've taken the human resources department and we have put it into everything.
Yes.
And on top of that, we've created a unique role within that department. Other companies have this role. I just don't think they necessarily treat it the exact same way, which is we've said, okay, there's a financial commitment that the studio is going to make, which is regardless of how much we grow, they are the one department that must always scale to that growth. There are no concessions there. It has to happen. Every X number of people that join the studio triggers a hiring of a new person within that role. That way, they are always proportionally as large as the growth of the company. That is a mandatory must. And nobody will, all the owners and all of that will never argue that point. That was a deal we all made at the beginning when we started. Now, what we've done is we've taken that role and we've infused it into everything we do. They can attend dailies, rounds. They're responsible for socialization. They identify training. They have a whole subset of meetings where they're just interacting with each individual one-on-one.
Yeah.
And some of it gets documented. Some of it doesn't. It's this massive system we've built where we've integrated human resources into the day-to-day of everybody in the company.
Yeah.
The reason we've done that, now, anybody who was a paranoid person might think, wait a minute, so you've got HR looking at over the shoulder of everyone. And no, it's the opposite. In fact, what HR there is doing is they are building relationships with everyone, right? These relationships are based on honesty, transparency, and working really hard for the needs of those people. When someone needs something, they have in their job description to make everybody in leadership and people like myself know what those needs are. And as part of the job description, like you said before with your calendar, you have to act on those needs.
Yeah.
You don't get to just ignore them. Those needs are documented. There's a software system, and everybody knows that they have to be involved in executing on those needs. Now, it may be that we can't give you what you want. That's not the point. The point is that we will very quickly talk to you about what you want, and we will have that engagement with you, which a lot of companies find difficult to do because usually you need something and then you don't hear about it for months, if not a year, or, you know. So to me, the relationship that we have between those human resources representatives and the staff is a representation of the relationship between the staff and the company. And the more honest, sincere, and authentic those relationships can be, the more you will arrive at the truth, I think. Mm-hmm. When I say the truth, you know, it's in quotes that
could
be different truth for different people. So that would be my answer, which is the relationships are everything, and we are accountable for honoring what we have to do in order to make them as good as they possibly can be.
Awesome. You did answer my question, though.
I can tie
it back. Yeah. So
yeah, go ahead.
In my experience in, you know, I developing all these pitches I've developed and trying to really get a deep sense of truth into these stories and meaning, maybe meaning is even the better word. I find that the environments that I place myself in, those relationships with people, the people who I even have read the story and just give me their honest feedback on it, suddenly there's this spark that happens in that moment where it's like, oh, it just unlocks something meaningful that I could not see otherwise. And so, yeah, building that structure of relationships that are very truthful, that there's not backbiting. You know, the whole point of this relationship is to be very transparent and also very positive and always be lifting each other upward.
That's right.
Then that is an environment where you can tell deeply meaningful stories.
Can I tell you, there's nothing that I love more, and this happens all the time at Steamroller, which I'm proud to say, than when I have someone say to me, wait, you're coming to talk to me about this thing? And I'm like, yeah, I found out that you have this need. And they're like, but I just mentioned that to someone yesterday. And I'm like, yeah, I know, because that's important to us. And we've built a system around nurturing that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, thank you. And I'll be like, listen, I'm sorry, I can't give you exactly what you want, but you now have something, or you know what the future holds, and there's clarity.
Yeah.
And in that moment of clarity, I've built trust with you. And that trust means everything. It could be the difference between you leaving us for one reason or another.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's huge for me. So
I love how you use the word clarity too, that because that was part of the question. the highest clarity of truth, right?
Clarity.
You have to create a moment of clarity in your relationships with a person. Yeah,
that's right.
That's
through recognition and accountability of needs of the relationship. You know, it's like I said to somebody yesterday, if you have a fight with your mother, you don't let 10 days go by where you don't talk to each other. Right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. That's absurd.
Yeah.
If I have an argument with my wife, I'm there 5 minutes later, like, hey, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Right? Because the relationship is essential. The communication and the way that you are together is essential. It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. It's family.
Love that. Well, usually at the end of the show, I ask where people can connect to you or follow you. I imagine that you want people to engage with Steamroller Studios. Is there anything else that you'd like them to engage with or?
Well, I mean, if people are interested in connecting with me, you know, they can always reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, LinkedIn's great.
LinkedIn's great. And of course, our website is awesome. And if anybody wants to come work with us, you know, we're often hiring.
Actively hiring in many different areas.
Actively hiring. Yeah. Have not stopped for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, this was wonderful. Thank you. And until next time, I hope we all get a little wiser. Thank you for watching the Directing Animation Livecast, hosted by Scott Weiser, audio version edited by Kira Horowitz, copyright Scott Weiser LLC 2022. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube and ring that notification bell.